So good morning. And today's theme is letting go. And some people associate letting go with Buddhism. That's a very central practice for Buddhists, to learn to let go. And you can let go wisely, and you can let go unwisely. And so it takes some study of letting go. And the reason for letting go is that the analysis, the Buddhist understanding of suffering, is that we suffer because we cling. Without clinging, the claim is that we would have no suffering. And certainly it's possible to look at most of our suffering and see that there's usually an element of clinging or craving or grasping or resistance as part of it. Resistance is also considered a form of clinging or craving. And we're anxious about things, we're afraid of things, we want things, we're frustrated because things don't go our way. We don't want certain things to happen, we try to hold them at bay. There's things that, there's a whole slew of things that happen where somehow the mind or the heart tightens up. And that tightening that happens is painful. So it isn't simply that that clinging causes suffering down the line. The very act of clinging causes suffering. So much so that one of the core teachings of Buddhism, the Four Noble Truths, can be summarized by saying, if you cling, you will suffer. If you let go of that clinging, that suffering will stop. And I like that wording because it's a little bit reversed to how it's usually done. It makes it easier to go along with, I think. If you cling, you will suffer. If you let go of that clinging, that suffering will end, will cease. So, as people do practice like mindfulness of paying attention, being present for what is, one of the things you'll be present for sooner or later is the way in which you cling, or the way in which you suffer. And if you meditate, I think you'll probably be aware of it quite soon. If you keep yourself distracted, either in fantasy or keeping busy or something, it's easy to kind of be distracted from one's own suffering. But if you sit still, sometimes it comes and becomes clear. And then the task is, how do we relate to that? What do we do about that? And there's a whole slew of things, the whole toolkit that Buddhism offers of what to do about our suffering, and a whole toolkit that takes us beyond suffering into what's called liberation, or being awake. Liberation, wakefulness, freedom are all synonymous with the movement of the release of clinging. So the task of becoming free of clinging, is the endeavor, the primary endeavor of Buddhists. And so the question is, how do we endeavor? What kind of effort do we make in this endeavor? And in the Eightfold Path, the Buddha has one piece of the path is called right endeavor. Sometimes it's called right effort. It's the sixth step in the path. And last week, I began talking about this right effort or right endeavor. And there's kind of a formulaic depiction of what makes up right endeavor. It's kind of a little bit abstract, and then you have to fill in the abstraction. And to be very simple about it, the right endeavor, it is to let go of whatever is unhelpful and cultivate whatever is helpful. Seems pretty good. So whatever is unhelpful for you, or unhealthy for you, let go of. And whatever is helpful for you, or healthy for you, you try to cultivate that. And the word here is kusala, which means, usually translated as skillful. So whatever is unskillful, let go of that. And whatever is skillful, cultivate that. And none of these terms, helpful, healthy, skillful, imply a moral judgment. I don't think it does. Some people say, let go of what's bad and cultivate what's good. But that's kind of a little bit then, you know, a little bit more moralistic. And this is very important not to take it as being moralistic, because certainly a lot of things we let go of is we let go of things which are unhealthy or harmful and sometimes unethical. But the interesting thing is that if you have a purpose in mind for your life, some things are unskillful or unhelpful for that purpose, but are helpful for other purposes. So in letting go of what's unskillful or unhelpful, sometimes we also learn to let go of things which in other contexts might be quite good, quite wonderful. And so, you know, a lot of us do that all the time. We have to make choices in our life between all the wonderful things we can do and endeavors. And some people like go to school and they choose one class over another class. You can't do more than, you know, four classes a semester or something. And so, you know, it's always all the great, great classes. They're great, they are great classes, but you have to let go of your desire, because I remember one semester or quarter, I tried taking six classes. And I survived the quarter. But as soon as I took the last exam, it was Easter break, I just plummeted into this awful flu and cold. Just like, I did the last period on the exam, you know. I didn't even see it coming, the cold. And I was sick the whole Easter break, just, you know, because I think I just had driven myself silly with my all the hard work. And I still wasn't able to do all the things I could have done. There were all these great classes still out there. So this neurotic pursuit of every possible good activity is, I think, is a illness of many people in our society. The Buddha really taught, let go of what's unskillful. It's not moralistic. It's let go of that which is unskillful or unhelpful for the purposes you have. And if the purpose is liberation or freedom from clinging, then you need to use that as the criteria for analyzing what you let go of. It was very strange for many of us when I was in Burma studying with Upandita. And he would tell us, we were doing intensive meditation practice all day, mindfulness practice, and he would tell us, don't do any compassion practice. What? Half of Buddhism is about compassion and having compassion. And here we were practicing meditation every day, week after week. What about compassion? It's like, it felt so strange to us to have him say that. It's a cold, cruel. But the reason was that I think he had a lot of compassion and he valued the importance of compassion. But we were there to do a very particular meditation practice, which was considered the practice for him, his mind, for attaining liberation. And so, refrain from doing things which get in the way from that. Just stay on course with this main practice. So, let go of what's unhelpful and cultivate what is helpful. Now, these, again, are divided into two. So, letting go of what's unhelpful is divided into two. One is you restrain yourself from doing, you restrain yourself, or you prevent the arising of unskillful states of mind or activities which have not yet arisen. So unhelpful things which haven't occurred yet, prevent them from occurring. And that's what we talked about last week. This week we're talking about the second of these endeavors, which then is abandon the unskillful states that have arisen. So if you can prevent them from coming, that's great. But if you can't prevent them, if they come, then learn to let go of them, to abandon them. So prevent and abandon are the two aspects of letting go. The two aspects of cultivating are cultivating skillful states, and then the second one is keeping them. So prevent, abandon, cultivate, and keep. And that becomes the acronym PAC. And this is, you know, what you need in your Buddhist backpack. You need those four tools. And so today is letting go. And I've had people look at me, ask me, with complete sincerity, completely perplexed, and say, how do you let go? How do you let go? And now it's one thing, you know, if you're holding on physically to something, you know, your friend's trying to leave and you're just holding on, you know, to, don't go, you know. Then letting go is just releasing your hand. And something that sometimes I wish my little children would learn. But, and sometimes letting go is something that's is physical on its inner way. Because one of the things that I find very helpful to do with when I'm holding and clinging is to actually see if I can find some place in my body that that clinging manifests itself. So, you know, it could be gripped in my stomach, you know. I'm gripped, I'm in the grip of something, we say. And the grip of something, I mean, you're gripping. And sometimes your whole body can be gripped because you're tense. Or your stomach, or your shoulders, or your jaws, or your eyes, or eyebrows, or forehead, temples, neck. All kinds of things can be gripped. And sometimes there are very strong emotions connected to clinging, and it feels, you can feel it in the body. Sometimes it's very subtle. And sometimes you can be in the grip of, or be gripping onto, certain thoughts. And certain thoughts we kind of reach into, we hold on to, we're really interested in or preoccupied with. And that preoccupation sometimes, I can feel sometimes there's a very subtle tightening of some of the muscles around my eyes, my forehead, sometimes my neck. Sometimes seemingly kind of in my deep in my skull, it seems like somehow there's a kind of a tightening up or pressure or that seems to occur. And so if I can identify the place, the physical place where clinging is, I find it very helpful because it's easier for me to let go of physical clinging sometimes than it is the psychological aspect of the clinging. So it has a psychological basis, but the physical basis is sometimes the door into learning how to let go. And also, there's less reason to argue with the value of letting go if it's physical. If it's psychological, you might argue, you know, from here to eternity, but why you can't let go. It's so important to hold on. You know, I have to hold on to my, you know, this and that, my, whatever it might be that you're holding, you know, I think it's so important. But physically, you have to hold on to this physical tightening up that happens. Maybe you can argue, well, I can still hold on psychologically, but I just, you know, I'll still hold on psychologically, but I'll just let go of the physical tension. But if you let go of the physical tension, it changes the game, changes the whole ecology of the situation. You'll get a different perspective on the psychological holding. And then maybe you'll be more likely to let go or see what's a wiser way to relate to it. So, it can be quite simplistic to say, you know, just sit down and let go. And to my embarrassment, sometimes I've basically given that message. Oh, it's so easy, Buddhist practice, just let go. And sometimes it is very easy to let go. And if it was always easy, we'd all be enlightened very quickly. We'd all sit here, you know, just half an hour sit, let go. That's it. But it's not so easy. There are certain areas, many areas in life where it's not easy to let go of. And yesterday we had a wonderful day-long retreat here for teens. And it felt pretty good, most of it. And and in the afternoon, you know, it was getting weird, kind of all, it was a long day, and afternoon, they were a little bit tired, I think I was getting a little bit tired, and had a little bit of, not a big dip, sometimes for grown-ups it's even worse, the afternoon dip. But it was a little, it felt a little bit, a little dip. And, but then I asked them, I talked to them a little bit about attachments, and I said, what are some of the things you're attached to, things you cling to? And they woke up. And it was great. You know, they went through all this whole list. They all, not everyone raised their hand, but they were really honest. They were all these 14-year-olds. You know, they were really honest about what they clung to and their attachments. And what do you cling to? Are you going to be as honest as the 14-year-olds? Well, I won't put you on the spot. Sometimes I think if you'd be like law school, right? Hey, you. I'll call on you. So letting go is not so easy, I think, sometimes. So it's very, I think, helpful to know that in the teachings of the Buddha, he gave seven different ways of letting go, or seven different approaches to letting go. And depending on the kind of clinging, it requires different kinds of clinging require different kind of approaches so it can be let go. So letting go is like the overarching goal, but then it can be accomplished through seven different kind of approaches. I don't take these as being the definitive seven ways, and I'm just going to list them, and then I'm going to try to unpack it as I understand it. I'll go through. I'll list them first, and maybe you shouldn't try to memorize them, but just maybe it's interesting to hear them. The list. The first way of letting go, first approach to letting go, is by seeing, using our powers of observation. The second approach is by restraining oneself. The third approach is by using. So I'll explain what that means later. The fourth approach is by tolerating. The fifth approach is avoiding. The sixth approach is destroying. And the seventh approach is developing. So depending what the issue is, one of these seven things is useful. And when I look at this list, I think it's actually helpful to see that the last six can be seen as paired with each other. Seeing or mindfulness does never needs to be paired with anything. It stands alone. But restraining and using are two different approaches that are kind of connected to each other. And I think it's helpful to see that tolerating and avoiding kind of work together. And then I think it's helpful to see that destroying and developing kind of are a pair. Sometimes it's appropriate to destroy and sometimes it's appropriate to develop. And by understanding them as being paired somehow, then when you get to the destroying piece, you won't think that, oh, these Buddhists are such, you know, negative, you know, just about destroying and, you know. Isn't that kind of an aversion in itself? Anyway, sometimes we destroy and sometimes we develop. Sometimes we create, sometimes we destroy. So seeing. Seeing is, you know, one of the primary things that we do in mindfulness practice. We learn to be mindful and present for what is, to see what's going on. And we try to see as deeply and clearly as we can. And sometimes things will let go of themselves when we see deeply enough. And we don't have to do the letting go. Sometimes, for example, if you're feeling off, feeling bad or something, and you really begin exploring what is really going on here, sometimes you see clearly the cost, or you see clearly where the clinging is, and just in the seeing it, it lets go of itself. Or almost like that. One place where people have this experience sometimes is around anger. As long as you're focusing on who's to blame, and your anger, and you're kind of fueling it all, that's one thing. But if you turn the attention around and feel what the cost of your anger is on yourself, really see it. I know some people will say, Gino, it's not worth the cost. The cost-benefit analysis does not work out in my favor. I think, just seeing that, I'll just let go. Or seeing that, or the Buddhist teaching is, when you're angry, you're doing your enemy a favor. You're harming yourself in a way your enemy could never harm you. And when you realize you're doing the enemy a favor, then enough. Okay, let go of that. So that's it. It involves seeing more deeply what's going on. sometimes we see our beliefs. What do we believe? What's behind it? And just seeing the belief, poof, sometimes it disappears. So we see, for example, maybe that we have this belief that we need to be, we're in a Buddhist center, and in Buddhist center it's really important to be kind. That's the belief. And you realize every time you come in here, you walk through the door, you feel a little bit oppressed. And you don't know why you feel oppressed. You know, something's off. You feel here, oh no. And then you come in one day and you're the first one, no one's here yet. And you say, well, that's great. I feel so relaxed. And then someone comes in, you feel a little bit oppressed. And you say, what's going on here? It's supposed to be a Buddhist place, Buddhist center. It's supposed to be a place I feel freer and nicer and everything. I feel kind of heavy. And then you finally pay attention to it and you see that you have this belief that you're supposed to be, you know, the epitome of kindness when you're here. And you see that belief, and since you're pretty wise, as soon as you see the belief, it goes, poof, that's just a belief. There's no authority behind it. No one's told me that. Wouldn't that be great? Poof. And you come here and you're kind of grouchy. And at least you're happy being grouchy. And you realize that no one's requiring you to be kind. So, you know, so there's some kind of belief. You see the belief and you question the authority behind the belief. The Buddha said that in this aspect of seeing, it's also helpful to know that seeing involves an orientation, a framework, what we choose to look for in our experience. And that some things that we look for, that we seek, are not useful things to seek for. And so part of using seeing to let go is to learn how to seek or look wisely. Now, I forgot to bring it, but there's a great list where the Buddha says, it is not helpful, skillful, to try to find your true self. It's not helpful to try to find that there is no self. Mm-hmm. It's not helpful to try to find who you were in the past. It's not helpful to realize who you are in the present. And it's not helpful to seek who you are going to be in the future. So what's left? So what the Buddha is trying to do here is all the different ways in which we try to relate to ourselves through the concept of a self, an identity, a self-identity, is spiritually a dead end. Spiritually, just leads you into what he called quicksand, a morass, a maze that you never get out of. As soon as you say, oh, this is who my true self is, you're in trouble. And some people spend a lot of time trying to answer this question, who am I? And it's very fascinating. The Buddha said, that's not a useful thing to look for. If you want to see, look for something different. If you want to see wisely, find something that's really skillful for the purpose of liberation. And what the Buddha said is, you look for your suffering. And how there's clinging that causes that suffering. That's what you can look for. Because if you look for the true self, it might cover over or prevent you from really seeing what's much more immediate. And what's immediate in your felt sense experience is the fact that there's suffering and clinging there. Once you let go of all your clinging, and you have this great freedom and peace and happiness for not clinging, then if you're still interested in knowing who your true self is, that's fine. No one's going to stop you. But Buddha said, at least, you know, do the, you know, first things first. So anyway, that's a big deal what I said. And some of you, you know, have reservations, would like to argue with me, and that's for another time. I have to get through the list. So please let go. Because I'm not going to let go until I finish the list. So the first one is seeing. And again, in our mindfulness tradition, we put a lot of emphasis on this. So much so that sometimes it seems like the only thing we teach. Just look and look and look and look, and everything else will follow. The second one is restraining, which is similar to what we talked about last week. And that is, here, rather than letting go takes the form of letting be. Letting something be. So you restrain yourself from picking something up. So you see something very tempting. The world has a lot of temptations. The world doesn't have any temptations at all, actually. But we see them as being tempting. And so we have to be very careful if we don't blame the world. But the world is what it is, you know. Though actually some people actually try to be tempting. Or, you know, advertisements try to be tempting. And anyway, so we see something and then we just don't pick it up. No, thank you. If I pick that up, that's not helpful for me. It's not skillful for me. And there's all kinds of things that we restrain from because we realize it's not skillful. Yesterday I told these 14-year-olds that I really haven't watched, I don't really know what's on television. I haven't known what's on television in 33 years. Their eyes went kind of wide. I'm not sure if my status went down or went up. Down. So a certain kind of restraint. I don't think I don't think I'm worse because of it. You know, certain kind of restraint. And so learning this wonderful capacity not to pick things up. You don't have to have aversion to anything, but say, oh, no, thank you. I'm not going to pick that up. And it involves a certain kind of strength, that capacity, not to give in to that reaching forward and grabbing. You walk by the refrigerator? No, thanks. I'm content. Or how about if you're full? You've eaten a nice meal, you're actually pretty content, but there's actually more food. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not helpful for meditation to overeat. So we restrain. On retreats, we restrain from conversations. It's a very strange thing to do in our society. But on retreats, we find it very helpful not to engage in social conversation because it tends to stir a lot of things up. So I think a wise Buddhist life, Buddhist practice, involves reflecting a little bit what is useful to restrain from or hold back from or not pick up or not engage in. And it doesn't mean that the thing we're restraining from is bad or wrong. It just means that not now. This is not helpful for the purposes I have in mind. Or it might be harmful for you. So you learn how to restrain. No thanks. Not that. Not now. So seeing and then restraining. The next one is using. And this doesn't mean you refrain anymore. It means you engage in. You pick it up. Sometimes you learn to let go by picking up. When the Buddha talked about this, he said, certain things you need to use. Basically, he said this way, you need to use it. You need to eat. You need to have clothes. You need to have housing. So you pick it up. You use it. But you use it appropriately. You don't overdo it. So with food, you use it appropriately. And you learn to let go, but not by letting go, restraining from it, but just using it just the right amount. So you track yourself and watch what's going on. I think this idea of using is very interesting because sometimes we're better off, we need to understand something really well, and we only understand by using it, by doing it, by engaging in it. And so, for example, some people can be quite repressed or out of touch with certain emotions, like anger. And sometimes it's actually helpful to be angry and stay angry so that you can study it. It means maybe you go, you know, into the woods, someplace quiet in your room, and, you know, so you can be angry safely. But you don't try to restrain it or let go of it too quickly. And many years ago, I spent a little bit of time in therapy. And one of the most useful things a therapist helped me to do was, after I'd been a monk for many years, I'd practiced a long time, and I was really good at letting go. And the therapist told me, Gil, don't let go so quickly. You know, the first chance you get, don't let go. And she had this term called hovering. And so just hover with it. Like, Gil, hover with your anger. Just let it be there and study it. And I found that really useful. So it's kind of like using, letting it be so you can study it. Or sometimes you pick it up so you can study it. When I was in, and there's a lot of things in life you could do that. If you have some problem with something, you might choose to do pick it up, engage in it in a context or situation where you feel you can really study it and really be present for it. Maybe you spend an hour in meditation first, and you have an hour afterwards, and then you're going to do this unskillful, unhelpful thing that you do. And you can do it framed by your meditation time. And you have a whole different way of understanding it. And you're trying to go deeper into it and see what needs to be liberated in that. That you only. When I was in the monastery in Japan, one monastery in Japan, at the end of the 7-day retreat, I'll tell this story a little bit differently. I was told by those monks there that sometimes during the course of the year, they have a ritual or practice of supposedly, secretly, jumping over the wall of the monastery and going to town. Now, it was kind of like built into the schedule, but it was supposed to be secret, you know, and everybody, you know, everybody did it kind of, you know, once the lights went out, you know, they followed their ritual, you know, just right. Lights went out. Bed count was made. All the monks are in bed. Thank you. Lights go out. They close the door. The monks jump out the window. And what I was told was that they would go to town to some bar, and they would drink themselves silly. You know, just drink and drink and drink and drink. And the theory behind this was they drink themselves so sick that they never want to drink again. I don't recommend this at all. But some people do this practice, not with alcohol, please. That's not what I mean. But some people do it with food. You know, you're really addicted to chocolate or some cookies, and you just can't get free of this addiction. Well, go to a store and buy just a whole bunch, and sit down, and you have a whole afternoon. You're free. And stuff yourself. And then you'll never want that again. I don't know if this is wise, but this is. I know that there's some people who use this as a practice. So by using, you learn to let go. And so maybe it's not something you decide to do on your own, but maybe if you have some really big problem, maybe your teacher will tell you sometimes. You know, I think. I know this is a technique that works for some people. You learn to let go by using. Okay, so seeing, restraining, and using. The next one is tolerating. And some things you learn to let go of by tolerating the difficulty. Things are difficult. The weather is cold, it's noisy, it's you're uncomfortable, or something's not going quite well. And rather than kind of running away or preventing it, you know, not meditating, not practicing, or not living with what's going on, the letting go happens. You let go into it. You let go into allowing it to be there. So you tolerate. And toleration is the usual way it's translated into English, but many of us in English like the word acceptance or allow. So letting go here means allowing something to be, or accepting its presence. And so letting go of the ways we're non-accepting of it. So sometimes it has to do with our own inner life. So for example, maybe you are grumpy. And maybe you come to a Buddhist center and, you know, hope no one notices, you know, sometimes I'll be grumpy. And maybe in order to be at peace, in order to let, you know, find your peace, you don't let go of your grumpiness because you don't know how, but you have to let go of your judgment about being grumpy. You just have to be accepting of this grumpiness. And you have a certain kind of peace because now you're not in conflict with your grumpiness. So tolerating, allowing, accepting is sometimes what's involved in letting go. Seeing, restraining, using, tolerating. The next one is avoiding. And avoiding maybe is a little different than restraining. Restraining is when you're somehow tempted, temptation is there. Avoiding is that you just don't go there. Where the temptation might be, where the tendency might be. And sometimes that's a wise approach with certain kinds of clinging. And so, for example, I know that some people have addictions issues, alcohol, for example. They've learned that they don't go to bars because it's just too tempting once they're in the bar. They don't go to places where alcohol is served because, you know, it's too tempting. So there's a kind of letting go that we maintain or do by not simply avoiding situations. So avoiding maybe some people, hanging out with certain people where we see certain tendencies arise which are not helpful, we were trying to avoid. And so we avoid being around those people. So there's a wise use of avoiding. Knowing what's going on in your life, knowing what your tendencies are, is simply not going to go there. So seeing, restraining, using, tolerating, and then was this what I just said? Avoiding. And then destroying and developing. And destroying, you find in the teachings of the Buddha a lot of very powerful words like destroy, eradicate, cut off, crush. And having to do with in relationship to our clinging. And there's a lot of words for clinging in the Buddhist tradition. And some of them are things like defilements or toxins or very powerful words. And you know, none of you, I'm sure, is your clinging that, you know, warrants those kind of language. but there are people who, you just have to read the newspaper, you know, for whom their clinging is really toxic to themselves and to other people. And so the aim of letting go and of becoming free of these toxins, of these defilements, of these different forces of clinging, is we don't just want to learn how to let go of them, you know, every time they appear. The goal of Buddhism is to let go of them once and for all. And some people can be quite good at letting go when they arise, but in real deep, genuine Buddhist practice, you want to do more than just let go in the moment. You want to be able to look deeply enough, get still enough, concentrated enough, do the kind of inner work that allows you to get to what's called the roots. The roots of your tendencies, the roots of your clinging. So if you're clinging to not being a grumpy person, and you have it might be at the root of that is that you actually have a clinging to being a self. The idea of having an identity is at the root of the kind of identity you close your identity with, what you close it with. So it's not just simply letting go of being a kind person, it's letting go of having to be any kind of person. That's more at the root. So to destroy, another expression is to uproot. We're looking for the roots and trying to uproot them once and for all. And one of the classic examples is analogies is you, apparently if you cut a banana stump, banana tree at the stump, it can't grow anymore. That's it. You know, some trees, you know, redwood trees, they sprout again. But banana trees, you cut them off, that's it. So the Buddha said, you'd be like you're cutting off a banana tree and it can't grow again. So to destroy some of these, the tendencies to cling. And then the final one is to develop. And some things are let go by not necessarily developing them, but by cultivating and developing other things. So for example, if you have trouble letting go of being anxious, perhaps what you need to do is, and you can't let go of your anxiety, what you need to do is develop your confidence. And when the confidence is really strong, the anxiety just sloughs off. It just kind of doesn't become an issue anymore. Sometimes if anger is a real issue, you can cultivate loving kindness. And when that loving kindness is really strong, the anger just simply doesn't arise. And so there's cultivate certain kind of strengths. And this is a lot of emphasis is given in this in Buddhism, because Buddhism has a lot of respect for how difficult it is to really let go. And if you really want to do the work of letting go well enough to go all the way to liberation, then it's helpful to develop some kind of strengths also. For one thing, to let go of your self-concept, to let go of self-identity, without having some core strength, it's very hard to let go of self-identity. It's very frightening. To let go of some of the deepest clings we have, it helps to actually have a lot of strong inner joy, strong sense of inner well-being. So we cultivate a strong sense of joy or well-being that allows us then to be willing to let go. So that's the topic for next week, is cultivation. Cultivating skillful states, helpful states. So, you let go a little, you'll have a little peace. If you let go a medium amount, you'll have a medium amount of peace. And if you let go completely, you will have complete peace. May it be. So thank you.